Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Wednesday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. I appreciate that. The Dow is trading in negative territory this afternoon, down about 20 points or so. But the jobs, wow, the jobs are skyrocketing. Everyone has a job. Some people have two jobs and they don't even want them. Terry Savage is on a phone line to talk about what's going on. Now, I want to talk, I know you do a lot of personal finance, and I want to look at debt and all of that a little bit later, but let's start with this. Well, let me start with International Women's Day. I know you're making a great sacrifice in actually working today.
I'm glad you said that.
On International.
And my note to you, I just want to acknowledge this is International Women's Day, and many women have chosen to express themselves by not going to work. But I figure, Steve, they're all home listening to radio because they're all smart women that have stayed home today, and they're listening to us. So my good job for International Women's Day is to help people with their personal finances, especially women, to become financially independent. That's how I'm rationalizing being here.
I think that if you want to show your value, you should go to work and create your value, not sit home. So I'm glad that you're working.
I think it'll be very noticeable, however, if women stop for a minute. You remember, did you learn in Greek, ancient Greek drama, Lysistrata?
Yeah.
Remember that, where the women went on strike?
Yeah, that was that actually was the basis for the Spike Lee movie that was set in Chicago a year or so ago.
Well, I have to give you the real original lesson for that. We do have power. We're your listeners. We buy the products that are advertised in the commercials, and we need to be heard.
Well, you absolutely have power, and here you are to be heard. And wait a minute. Okay, so first of all, the jobs report is coming out on Friday, which is a little bit later. Why is it didn't come out last Friday?
First Friday of the month. I'm looking at the calendar here.
Yeah, it's the 8th. So it would have. There was a Friday in March. Last Friday was in March, but it was early March.
Honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
It's always the first Friday of the month. I can't remember why.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to try to stump you there. Okay, well, it's coming out this Friday.
I really don't know. But boy, is it going to be it'll be very interesting. The report today is a report that comes out from the people that process payrolls. It's always a couple of days before the federal unemployment report that we always look forward to. And it has a pretty good track record of being correct, even more accurate in predicting the government report than anything else.
298,000 jobs created last month?
The consensus on the street was 175,000.
Double, almost double.
It's a huge miss. It's almost double. And people, I mean, you can see the notes go around all the trading rooms. Was that right? Was that a misprint? And the big thing was that it was a lot of it wasn't in services jobs, but it was in manufacturing jobs and construction jobs. And boy, you know, the street was going anywhere from 175 to 190 to 298,000.
Okay,
that
so
means the economy is growing.
It means it's growing right along Donald Trump's guidelines or pathways, right? He said he was going to be the guy to encourage manufacturing, and here these manufacturing jobs are growing. Am I reading that wrong?
Well, you know, we just had another report. I forget where I read it this morning. The GDP for the fourth quarter is looking like it was for the first quarter. It's looking like it was only 1.3%. So we're getting very contradictory numbers. Leave politics. I'm not sure any politician can take credit for anything. The only place where emotion shows up right away is in the stock market, which we've seen. But the numbers speak for themselves. If this is a correct number, if there's no correction released later today, then you can expect reports of stronger growth in the economy. Now, it's very interesting because that does two things. Okay, if we're having more people working, more consumer demand because people have jobs, more growth in the economy, that should be good for the stock market in general. On the other hand, said the economist.
There's always another hand with economists.
Yeah, the Fed is for sure going to raise interest rates in March and might be able to be raising them very quickly right after that. And so higher interest rates historically are not great for the stock market. But as a reminder, they're not great for the stock market when the Fed is raising rates to slow a booming economy. If higher rates come about inherently within the market, which they are in the treasury note market, treasury bond market, rates are moving up because of this demand for money and economic growth. then that's not so bearish for the stock market. But the truth is that usually the stock market goes one way and interest rates go the other. So if rates are going up, you kind of tend to guess that the market might have some roadblocks in front of it.
Well, Janet Yellen spoke in Chicago, I think it was earlier this week or late last week, saying pretty much that the rates are going to go up in March, right? I mean, that's what it's going to happen.
The question is now, will there be two or three interest rate hikes this year? And at some point, that begins to be felt throughout the economy. For starters, before we get to debt. But if you are out there now and you've been thinking, well, I had to refinance my mortgage one more time, the two-year Treasury note is now trading at levels not seen since 2009. The 10-year note, I should say, and that's the rate on which mortgage rates are based. So if you were planning to get a commitment or buy a home, you're going to see a surge of mortgage applications coming in, and rates are moving up.
I know you've been watching gold in recent weeks. What's that doing now?
Well, you know, I thought it was about last month. Gold was just a little over $1,200 an ounce. And I said, you know, it looks like we're having growth. It looks like we might even have a pickup in inflation. This would be not a bad time to load up on some gold stocks or gold coins, however you want to do it. And I was so proud of myself because 3 weeks later, not even 3 weeks later, the gold was up from 1203 to 1260 something. It is now right back down, which shows you the market always gives you chances. Last I looked was 1209.
That's Terry Savage. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about just how much money I owe to everybody. My credit card, my auto loan, my uncle. Debt is going back up, and we'll talk to Terry about that coming up on the Business Lunch. It's 12:23. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Later in the program, we will talk to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. They've got a story about McDonald's apparently going after Chick-fil-A's. Their chicken fingers are getting tastier, changing up the sauce, and maybe they're going to make a run at Chick-fil-A in the South. Right now, Terry Savage is on a phone line. We talk about personal finance. Now, Terry, when the crisis hit 2008 and so, right, our debt started to drop. We stopped spending so much. The confidence is increasing. We're starting to spend a little bit more, and now our debt is going up.
Going up, Steve. More Americans owe more debt now than at any time since the last recession.
Okay, so why is it foolish spending? I mean, is that sort of overconfidence?
We thought we learned the lesson.
Right.
That's my message. That is my message. I loved your lead in, Steve. Okay, I'm going to add up this, that, and the other thing. It kind of creeps up on you, the debt that you're taking on. And we're not just talking about credit card debt, which is well over $1 trillion again. We're not just talking about student loan debt. We've talked about so much. It's more student loan debt. $1.3 trillion than there is credit card debt. But other kinds of debt from the people who can least afford it and will then be most impacted by rising rates.
I'm going to ask you about subprime car loans.
Yeah, nobody even heard the word subprime car loans. It's an industry term, but then whoever heard the term subprime mortgages before the last crash? But those are loans that are made to people with a credit score of 660 or lower. You know, you've heard those radio ads, credit, no problem, drive right in, sign and drive right out. Those loans have nearly tripled since 2009, and now the delinquency rates are rising. This in the middle of the good jobs report, which shows more people getting more jobs, as you pointed out, maybe second jobs. And in the third quarter of last fall, delinquency rates on these subprime auto loans rose to their highest level since 2010.
So they sell you a car at a rate you can't afford, and then when you can't afford it, they take the car back and sell it to someone else.
Well, you know, there's a plenty of cushion in the price of these cars, and there's plenty of cushion. I mean, basically, the subprime sellers of auto, typically used cars, get these subprime loans. They make their money on the price of the car they sold you. They charge a very high interest rate. They have a cushion, but they can't withstand everything. So when you start seeing delinquent, they make a lot of money when people are paying. When people aren't paying, you've got a crisis. But that's not even what I see. I'm going to tell you something that I think is going to be the real crisis of debt this time. And I bet you're not aware of it, and most of our listeners, but if you have kids in their 20s and 30s, they're probably aware of something called peer-to-peer loans, online lending. There have been a bunch of companies that have sprung up in the last 5-6 years where, and I always said, this is ridiculous. If you won't lend your nephew $5,000 for his business venture or his whatever, why would you lend it to a complete stranger? But that's what the internet has made possible. It's a big, huge business, peer-to-peer lending. And if these people have a problem, if one of them loses their job in an economic slowdown, you're not just stiffing the bank or the
man
loan company.
Here on International Women's Day, you're not just stiffing the man.
On the other side, two people get hurt. The person that made the loan and the person that, of course, it defaults on the loan that they borrowed. So it could be a kind of an underground type thing right now. But just remember, peer-to-peer lending has grown like crazy. And if rates go up and some of these are on adjustable rates, you could see a crisis in debt.
All right, we've got less than a minute left then. What should people do aside from just taking stock, as you always suggest? What's some good advice for them?
Look, these are good times. You remember the Bible, 7 good years, 7 lean years. This is the time to pay down your debt. This is the time to talk to your adult children, because I know we have a lot of grown-ups out there, about what kind of debt they're taking on. And don't worry, Mom, it's an online deal. You wouldn't understand it. Debt is debt. And when things slow down abruptly, people get hurt. Same way, refinance your mortgage, pay down your credit card debt. Fed says rates are going up. Believe them. The market's telling you that.
Terry Savage, good to talk to you this week. I appreciate it.
That's the savage truth.
We'll talk to you again coming up soon. Have a great weekend, Terry.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Oh, that's amazing. A car, or semi rather, may be blown off over on the Bishop Ford Expressway. They used to issue tractor trailer advisors. I don't know if they still do that, but a wind advisory for today, so watch out for that. Okay, Frank Sennett's on the phone line, and I was just so tempted to do a wind transition. I'm not going to do it, Frank.
I was going to say, speaking of windy, here I am.
You know, it was so easy, and I thought I'd be a little courteous, but I brought it up anyway, so I guess it doesn't count. Frank from Crane Chicago Business, how are you, my friend?
Good, how are you?
Good. Okay, so years ago, I haven't taken the train regularly for a few years, but years ago when I did, I would always take the water taxi, the Wendella taxi, along the river, and we'd go past Wolf Point, which is right there at the bend of the Chicago River. And there used to be an otter that actually lived there that you could see from time to time, an otter in the waters off Wolf Point. I never saw a wolf on Wolf Point, but probably won't now because it was sort of a controversial development. They agreed to develop it. The buildings are going up. And now you guys have a story about the Kennedys and the Hines. Is it the Hines family that owns one of the buildings, has it up for sale? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so it's a joint venture, including the Kennedy family and Hines Interest, and they have hired a broker to sell Wolf Point West. It's a brand-new 48-story apartment tower on Wolf Point, and as you say, getting approval for this project in the first place was a little rocky. There were a lot of questions from neighboring buildings about the view shed, you know, too much shadow and that kind of thing, and finally got through, and this is the first building. And they're selling it, they're kind of building it to spec and flipping it in a way, because they're moving right along to focus on the next project, which is a 66-story, $360 million called Wolf Point East.
And that's
so
right.
Wolf Point West and Wolf Point East.
And so it's right there, right? They're adjacent buildings.
Yeah, so they're packing a lot of buildings into that parcel right in front of the merchandise mart.
But, man, if you've got the view, what a view you've got, right? Heading east down the Chicago River, it's got to be the best view in the city.
Oh, gorgeous. Looking down at the bridges, it's like you're watching the opening credits for the old Bob Newhart show every day when you go to
Except that was back in the day of free TV, and there's nothing free about this view, right? I mean, these are expensive apartments.
That's right. And then Christopher Kennedy, who is also running for governor, he's the guy who oversees his family's real estate holdings, so he's very involved in this deal. And as you say, the pricing on this is 85% occupied, and the apartments there rent for up to $3.70 per square foot, making it one of the 10 most expensive buildings in the city. So I got us a big partner condo there for we can have a game room and.
That's all I want. I just want a party place. I don't really want to. I don't want to move in with you, Frank. Was that understood?
It's just for fun and recreation.
Okay, good.
Like, kind of like Pete's apartment in the city on Mad Men.
Right, exactly. Okay, but there are a lot of apartments coming in downtown, right? I would imagine there's one like as luxurious as this. There's certainly room for it, but aren't we sort of reaching a glut of apartment space downtown?
Yeah, there's going to be 8,000 units added to downtown Chicago just this year and next year alone, and that'll increase the supply by 23%. And occupancies are already kind of dipping. This is the zenith, the high point, so it makes sense that they would try to sell the building now while the getting's good.
And so are people, you know, I this might be an unfair question for you. I don't mean to put you in a spot, but are people more inclined to rent downtown now than to try to buy a condo? It seems like there used to be more condo action.
It's so funny. It's cyclical. Over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, it was condo conversions, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and now it's back to rental units. So I think it's just a cyclical thing that it seesaws back and forth. And right now we're really in the heart of the apartment boom. So, you know, and if they're able to sell this at a premium, they spent I've lost my train here. They have spent.
This is where I would come in and help you, but I choose not to.
$160 million. I was looking at a figure right next to it. So they built it for $160 million, and they're looking for $305 million.
Wow,
so
that's not a
that
bad.
That would be a very nice return on the investment.
Ed, the building's been standing less than 2 years, right?
Yeah. So this is again like quick turnaround, quick sale, and then they're going to move on to build the next tower. It seems like their timing, at least for Tower One, has been pretty perfect.
All right. I love the story that Claire Bushey has in Cranes about Anderson, because it was Enron, right, that brought down Anderson, Arthur Anderson, as an accounting firm. The name was kind of toxic, and now you've got two sort of survivors fighting to bring the name back.
Yeah, so this is this great Chicago company, right? Arthur Anderson was the youngest CPA in Illinois and in the early 1900s, and founded this firm that became one of the big five accounting firms, and then it ended in disgrace. And so now you've got a company in San Francisco that has been doing tax accounting, Anderson Tax. In 2014, that company changed its name to Anderson Tax. They bought the U.S. rights to Arthur Anderson and the global rights from Anderson Worldwide, which are kind of holding companies that are still around. And then everything seemed to be going okay until this French company just came out of the blue and called themselves Arthur Anderson International. They announced last week that they are going to take the name. And Anderson Tax in San Francisco, not too happy about it.
Do you speak French at all?
No.
Okay. Well, that was a little, but. So I'm tempted to try to pronounce the name in French, Quatre Juliette Maison Blanche. I don't speak French, but what it translates to, this cracks me up. This is the French company. In English, that means 4th of July White House. What is that? What's that about?
Well, they don't know. I mean, it is a bit confusing as to, you know, why this is happening. The Anderson Tax people in San Francisco are fighting this. And looking into the background of this company, it appears that one of the gentlemen who's resurrecting the name in France used to work at Anderson's Paris office, according to his LinkedIn page. There is more mystery here than there's more heat than light so far on this new company.
Well, if it's on his LinkedIn page, it's got to be true.
Exactly. and they noted that they have 50 partners and 1,000 professionals worldwide, et cetera. And their Chicago office, the address is at a business center.
Really?
In Chicago.
The 4th of July White House coming soon to an Arthur Anderson near you. that's one of the weirder stories I've read. I don't quite get unless they're setting it up to scam people, right? I mean, that could be a possibility where they're trying to create or recreate a reputable name and then rip people off.
Yeah, because enough time may have passed since the scandal that there's still the brand equity of the famed Anderson name. Yeah, possibly.
All right. So I teased earlier the fact that McDonald's might be in a tete-a-tete or a beak-a-beak with Chick-fil-A, that they might be going after them. That's a story by Peter Frost in Cranes. They're sampling what, high-end chicken, not nuggets, really. What is it they're doing in the Carolinas?
They're calling it buttermilk crispy tenders.
Tenders.
It is no preservatives, no, you know, artificial ingredients whatsoever. And they're introducing a new signature sauce to go with these nuggets, or these tenders, rather. And the saddest thing about this story is that they're only available in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I do have to say, when I go to McDonald's, I have the buttermilk chicken sandwich.
And that's good, isn't it? Yeah.
All right. So, but the idea is that maybe they can, I mean, they're not going to take on Chick. They're not going to defeat Chick-fil-A, right? But they, I suppose if you're in a car driving down the road and two of you wants Chick-fil-A and two of you wants burgers, if they have something close, McDonald's might win that car. Is that what this is about?
Yeah, I think so. Diversifying the menu and also upscaling it a little bit. For your money, for your $2.69, you get two of these buttermilk chicken strips and a biscuit. And, you know, and maybe if you're going by it, all these fast food chains are combining, right? Yum Brands, you always see those KFC, Taco Bell,
right.
You know, outlets.
Unleaded.
So kind of like doing, like doing this in the same building, you know, under the same brand.
All right, we'll see how that goes. And then one more real quick, Chicago-based United Airlines. Well, they just announced they were laying off some middle managed people, right? I was at Willis Tower earlier today, and it was gloomy. But
yeah.
The story here is about how they're hiring a lot of pilots, or what's the balance there?
Yeah, so the big headline today, this week, is that they're cutting 450 jobs, mostly in middle management, including 300 at Willis Tower. But they've really been on a hiring binge overall with the pilots and flight attendants. The airline had almost 11,500 pilots on staff at the end of last year. That's up 8% in 2 years and 15% higher than 2011. Flight attendant headcount up 9% in the past 2 years to almost 23,000, and that's 6% higher than 2011. So they are really beefing up the number of flights that United flies under its own flag instead of those regional carriers that they use as adjuncts. They're trying to run bigger planes on those routes, and hopefully if they can fill them up, they can achieve economies of scale, cheaper to fly them full, and make more money. So, but in the meantime, it's good for Chicago in the sense that most of the folks are here, and there's a lot of them.
All right, Frank Sennett, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it, and we'll see you next week.
All right, stay out of the wind.
12:51, it is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook as well. We have a public page there. All right, this morning I had, it was a thrill really to help MC an event from Community Health Charities. It was their Chicago Health Heroes Awards. And really, before this all came up, I did not know much about Community Health Charities. I do now. I know more anyway. Sam Samarian is in the studio. He's the Chief Membership Engagement Officer. And he's been talking to me way more than he's comfortable with over the past few months. And you have to do a little bit more. Sam, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks very much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Let's start just with this idea of Community Health Charities. What is it you guys do?
We've been in the workplace giving business for 60 years. We represent a variety of organizations, brands that you've heard of like a St. Jude, local brands like Lurie Children's Hospital, and those organizations have asked us to help them raise money in the workplace. So that's why we are in business, and we continue to do that very successfully.
Is it a chicken or egg thing? Where does it start with, the business looking for a charity or the charity looking for the help?
Actually, both.
Yeah.
And that's really the beauty of what we do. It's the intersection between the public sector, the private sector, and the charitable side that really makes things work.
And, well, how has it changed since you've been doing it? Because I would imagine things are a lot different now.
Things are very different. We went from a situation where people gave typically to organizations that they'd heard of.
Right.
And now people
are
sort
of the companies or the charities you'd see commercials for and
exactly.
Things like that.
And exactly. And so the brand recognition was very important. Now people are looking at causes and issues that they can rally around. And sometimes it's not just one organization, but it's multiple organizations getting involved to address that issue or cause.
I want to get to that in a couple of minutes. But first, tell me about today's event, the Chicago Health Heroes.
It was wonderful. And thank you again for emceeing. We had about 100 people there. They represented just what we talked about, the public sector, the private sector, and charitable organizations, all looking at how they can address issues in the community and really partner together, collaborate to make a difference.
And one of the featured speakers there was the director of Covenant House, which is just coming into Chicago.
Correct. Kevin Ryan was here from New York. Covenant House has now come to Chicago. They're in over 30 cities worldwide, and they really make a difference for young people that find themselves homeless with no place to turn. Covenant House is there. And we have other organizations in Chicago, obviously, that play in that space, but Covenant House will have a dramatic impact here
okay,
in Chicago.
Okay, so here's what I like about all of this, Sam, is that everyone's a winner. I mean, there's no downside to any of this, because you certainly have charities that who benefit. You have the people who work for those charities who benefit, or who those charities work to help. But tell me a little bit about the value of having this sort of collective giving in an office or in a workplace. I mean, you know, you can imagine the sitcom where some guy's berating his workers to give to the favorite charity, but there's real value in collective sort of charitable contributions.
There is, because it almost forces collaboration. It forces people to work together, and we don't want to force people to do anything. We want them to choose the charities that mean most to them, that impact their lives, and to work, whether it's volunteering, whether it's giving, or using the services of those charities. That's the beauty of bringing that together and having multiple charities and multiple companies work together. That's how you really solve problems at the community level.
All right, tell me a little bit about this movement toward a cause rather than a charitable name. It sounds to me like the millennials are behind this.
I think the millennials are, but I'll just use myself as an example, and I'm clearly not a millennial.
you were at one time. Well, no, never really,
A millennium ago. Anyway, but for me, I see a number of organizations that are addressing issues, whether it's homelessness, whether it's arthritis, diabetes, those types of things. To the extent we bring those groups together to commonly address the problem, it's much more effective. You get a greater breadth of involvement from the community, and you also are able to move the needle on the problem significantly, whereas individually they may not be able to dramatically move the needle.
Right.
You can do that as a group.
And not to discourage giving to big national or international charities by any means, but
actually they're a part of the solution as well.
Yeah,
because they offer...
Sure, but when it's closer to home, sometimes you can drive by and say, that's something I'm helping.
Absolutely. And so when it's personal to you, you're more likely to get involved, whether it's time or money.
And one of the things that came up in one of the conversations today, though, is, you know, millennials have a different sort of list of priorities than we do, people of our generation. And sometimes it is this giving, it is this sort of cause action that's more important to them than the six paid sick days every year.
I think what you see are people that want to get in and get involved, get their hands dirty, so to speak, before they may commit resources, financial resources, to an organization. So that's what's driven a lot of that. I do think, though, if you look at the research, that's going to start to swing back around as they have families and that whole situation changes.
And so as far as community health charities, what size of company do you need to work with?
We work with companies of all size. In fact, personally, I work with everybody from American Express to companies you saw at the event today,
right,
you know, with less than 1,000 employees.
I love it, because I just think it's a way to improve the business place, your workplace, and help other people.
Absolutely. And we have something for a company of every size. We have whatever type of resource they need, whether it's an add-on to what they have or whether they have nothing and they need some information on health, wellness, volunteering, giving. We can provide that.
How do people find out more information about you?
www.healthcharities.org.
Sam, thanks for coming in. Great to see you.
Steve, likewise. Take care.